First time with the program?
I can always spot a newbie. It's my fifth year with Wings. I guess Paul McCartney's got nothing on me, huh? Love, take me down to the streets.
It's not a Wings song.
Yeah, it's one of their hits from the 70s. I'm not sure which one.
It's not.
It isn't?
No.
I think it might be.
That's not. Nobody sings that song.
I don't know about that. I'll have to Google it.
TBTL.
Well, well, here we are.
I want to congratulate you for being on time.
I got recognized on the street today. Guy had already met me and then forgotten he met me and then recognized me from TV and then remembered me again.
Do not put that on the imaginary radio show.
Hey, you sound like you might be a little bit jealous, babe. You know, and I know a little something about being jealous because people have been jealous of me my entire life.
I feel so full of... What's the opposite of shame? Pride? No, not that far from shame.
Less shame?
Yeah.
Hey there, everybody. Let's do this. Let's stage a Tuesday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Ready to laugh and drop till your socks come off?
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
You ain't no rapper. You more like a TED Talk set to music.
Coming to you... Not just from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched up Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, but from the Burbank Springs Bedroom Broadcast Center. That is right. I am a little under the weather today.
I get dizzy spells, nausea, cold sweats, hot sweats, involuntary trembling, dead hands, numb lips, fingernail sensitivity, pelvic discomfort.
And those are just the ailments I'm comfortable talking about. I'm a little under the weather today, so I dragged the microphone over to my bed. And I'm sitting here with a show sheet and Rue Dog.
I'll say, what's up, Doke?
She's officially an emotional support animal, which means I'm letting her sit on the bed. Very rare for her. She gets excited. She's rooting for me to be sick because she knows it means she gets to hang out on the bed. So anyway, I'm here. I'm going to get through this show. We've got a great one in store for you, by the way. It's episode 2760 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We've got an update on that New Jersey school official who was pooping under the bleachers at a rival high school.
Poop diddy whoop scoop. Poop.
He pleaded guilty, but he brought a doctor's note. The doctors diagnosed him with something, and I'm not joking, a medical condition called runner's diarrhea.
I don't buy this for one iota. Not even a second.
There's a one problem with his story, and that is... Well, I'll tell you what the one problem with this guy's story is coming up. Also, I don't know if you watch Monday Night Football, but there is a new announcing team, and the sideline guy is a dude named Booger McFarland, and he rides around on the sideline in this crazy contraption, allegedly so he can see the plays better, but the problem is the crazy contraption is blocking the fans from seeing the game, and they're getting really mad. This is somebody yelling at him.
Booger, get out of the freaking way!
So we'll tell you what's going on with Booger McFarland's sideline machine. By the way, that sounds like some kind of a 70s, I don't know, like a 70s acid-laced kids album. Booger McFarland's sideline machine. So anyway, we'll do that. And, oh, speaking of football, it's a Tuesday afternoon edition of the TBTL No Point Conversion.
You gotta be a real football nerd to sit through the whole thing.
We'll do that later. The Browns have fired their manager, their coach, that is, and Seahawks are looking pretty good. So we'll get into all of that coming up. First, though, we gotta say hello to this guy.
Well, look who's back.
Longest running Cobrogan of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, and their majesty. He's a Cuyahoga clam. And he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. He's Andrew Walsh. Hello, my dude.
Hey, Luke. It's good to be back.
Welcome back.
Sorry to hear that you're under the weather. I wish you had just told me. This would have been a great excuse for me to have a one-on-one show with the listeners Not, I guess, unlike you had a one-on-one show with the listeners yesterday.
Well, that's the thing. And don't take this the wrong way, and I'm not saying that that wouldn't be a great time for the listeners, but I felt yesterday like I was really testing their patience with my just kind of like rambling for an hour plus. Let's just say things got into some conversational corners that I didn't intend them to. And so I thought, let's try to do something resembling a normal show today for those long-suffering listeners. And it's not a reflection, Andrew, on how you would handle things were you solo hosting today.
Yeah, well, I feel like I would have been the perfect antidote to that. I mean, listeners clamor for my one-man.
Do you have a tight 15 minutes on the Squirrel Hill shooting and our toxic president? Because I was able to really speak some truth to power on that yesterday, which I'm sure was great for the listeners.
See, and I feel like I could have offered some counterbalance because, you and I don't see eye to eye on everything. Really quickly, this is unrelated. This is a huge left turn in our conversation, but you were talking about Booger McFarland's football machine. This is a weird thought. I was walking through...
Booger, get out of the freaking way!
I was walking through the Dallas airport yesterday because that's where I had a layover, because obviously the fastest way from Cleveland to Seattle is through Dallas. And there's really no good way. I looked for, and it wasn't even me being cheap either. Like when I was booking my tickets to go to Cleveland, like it is just, there are no direct flights. There's no way to do it. And American Airlines has a hub in Dallas. So going out there, I only had to stop in Chicago. On the way back, though, I had to fly 3 hours south to Dallas and then 4.5 hours from Dallas back to Seattle. Actually, more on that in a second. I have an interesting story, I think. But I was walking through and I saw some seafood shop out of the side of my eye, out of the corner of my eye. And for a moment, I thought it was something called the Seafood Machine. And it wasn't, but I kept on going through my head thinking, like, what would be a good name for, like, a seafood restaurant if it had to be, like, the something-something seafood machine? Best I came up with was Papa Salty's Seafood Machine. And I was thinking, like, if I ever, like, got to, like, help write a sitcom, I would maybe put that in the background somewhere. Papa Salty's Seafood Machine. Would you go there?
Yeah, I would drive Booger McFarland's sideline machine to Papa Salty's Seafood Emporium.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, by the way, can I say one thing about that flight? Something happened to me that I wanted to tell you about that I thought was a kind of a breakthrough for me that happened on my first flight yesterday. Flying the first leg of my flight was exactly 3-hour flight, Cleveland to Dallas. And you know me, I am not somebody who likes to chit-chat on airplanes, right? As a matter of fact, sometimes I hear other people doing it, like, when they're strangers, and I just think, be quiet, you're annoying everybody. Yesterday, I got on the plane. I was watching Making a Murderer on Netflix my entire trip.
The new one?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Are you watching, like, the original one? When I've been on Netflix lately, I keep seeing ads for, like...
Yeah, they have a follow-up season. Season 2 is totally dropped now. You should probably watch it. I think it's right up your alley.
It's more on the Stephen Avery and Brendan Dassey thing, right?
Yes, and it's very... As a matter of fact, I wanted to hear your take on it because it's all about forensics. It's all... I mean, a huge part of it is about this new defense attorney, post-conviction attorney, who is coming in and using all kinds of highfalutin, I'll call it, forensics. Mm. And I'd like to know how that compares to your other forensics.
Well, I think I know what I'm doing from bed after this show is done.
I would like... I actually think us discussing it on the show wouldn't be the worst idea. But anyway, my phone was not quite charged enough for me to start watching a video, so I plugged in my phone into the battery pack that came with my away travel suitcase, by the way. A little free plug for our sponsor. And I'm waiting for it to charge, and I'm sitting next to a woman who I'm going to put in her... I'm talking like somebody in Making Detective. I'm going to put her in her early 30s, probably, and she's flying with her daughter, who's like, I don't know, eight, I think. And she just said something to me before we took off. She said one thing that started a conversation, maybe just kind of like, you know, where are you flying to, or is Dallas your final destination or something. We chit-chatted the entire 3 hours without ever feeling it. I never really felt awkward. I never felt like there were moments where, okay, now we got to keep this going. It was like one of the most, it was by far the most natural 3 hour surprise conversations I've had with a stranger probably ever. And there was nothing.
This was you and the baby, right?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. No, and there is nothing remarkable about
Gaga.
It. The only.
Oh, yeah.
9 years, by the way. Not 9 months, if I said 9 months. But there was nothing like super remarkable about it. I don't have any huge like bombshells to drop. It was just a pleasant conversation. I guess that is the huge bombshell. Andrew Walsh had a pleasant conversation for several hours on a plane, even though I'm very anti that.
I wonder if it was the fact that there didn't feel like there was pressure, because I think that's the part about a one of those conversations, whether it's in an elevator or on an airplane, but maybe more so on an airplane, that it's stressful and makes conversation bad, is this feeling that you're trapped with the person and that you are not, you're trying to sort of like indicate to them that you don't want to feel pressure to talk the whole time or whatever, but maybe the lack of feeling pressure about it was why it felt free and easy.
Maybe. I mean, because usually I don't have a problem being, you know, generally friendly if somebody starts a conversation with me on a plane. But, you know, if it starts to seem like, oh, I mean, listen, let's stereotype. Why not? That's what I'm into. It, you know, maybe it's somebody who's a little bit older, who you can tell is trying to kind of get their conversational claws in you or whatever. Like, I just, that's not why I'm on a plane. And so I, after a few, you know, back and forths, I'll kind of start to put my armor up a little bit and pop my headphones on. And this time it was one of those things where I kind of didn't even realize we were talking for so long. She's, you know, we're talking about her family. She's got a bunch of kids, you know, kind of has moved around a lot, leads a pretty different life than me. But, you know, I've talked about everything from television to Halloween to all kinds of stuff. I don't know, man. I guess the point of my story is I'm just a really good person who is navigating this world
almost perfectly.
Well, you did text
me. You freaked me out a little bit yesterday because I got a text from you that said, you might not be coming home. You met someone. And I was like, well, I don't know if I'm ready to be brought in on this side of your life. But then the someone was actually just a CPR dummy, presumably in the airport. What was that all about?
Yeah, I don't know. That was that was unrelated to this. I sent you that text before I got on this airplane. That was in the Cleveland airport. I passed some sort of a, they just have a little machine set up, almost like a little, almost looks like a small Papa Shot machine or something. I can't explain
it.
Almost looks like
I'm looking at it right now. Hands only CPR, 2 steps to save a life.
And then
learn
embedded,
and share.
And then embedded in it is like just like a male rubber torso. And you're supposed to just go up to that thing and I guess just start pumping away on that torso, although it doesn't use that language. I believe the language it uses is, touch to begin. Because I texted you, I said, you know, I fell in love with this machine. It had me at touch to begin. There was something very weird. I mean, teaching people CPR and encouraging people to engage with CPR could save lives. That's a good thing. But seeing this thing in the airport weirded me out a little bit, seeing this rubber male torso that it wanted me to touch.
Yeah, it's a laudable goal because honestly, I was like a YMCA lifeguard, but I would honestly probably not remember how to do CPR were I called upon to do it, even though at one time I did know how. So it's good to, I mean, it could really save someone's life. It's good to try to teach more people about it, but there's something unsettling about a headless, legless, armless torso that's just sitting in, like you said, what kind of looks like a Papa Shot machine in the airport.
Yeah, it was definitely a weird. I couldn't. I somehow ended up at the airport yesterday waiting for my first flight. And again, I had about, I guess, a 9.5 hour travel day ahead of me if you counted the layover in Dallas. And usually I am very prepared for that by making sure every electronic I have is charged to its hilt. But I, for some reason, somehow messed that up. And I showed up at the airport with like 35% battery on my phone, which to me is you just throw the phone away at that point and buy a new one.
Absolutely.
Like anything after
50%. Terrifying feeling.
Yes. Anything lower than 50%, I'm freaking out. And like I said, I did have that battery with me, but that doesn't charge quite as fast as plugging something into a wall. So I had to like, while all this, we'll talk about it more in No Point Conversion, but there was some huge drama going on in the Browns organization yesterday with firings and shiftings around. And I know that you guys were all on a text chain talking about the Browns, and I had to kind of opt out of that and just shut off my phone and let it charge because I had about a half hour. I needed to get that baby up to 100%. So I had to just shut down my phone, plug it into a wall in an awkward position and just kind of guard it there and stare at people as they walk by in the Cleveland airport. It was I like people
that must
watching.
Have been, that must have been hard.
To not have my phone on. Yeah, I was getting little – I mean, it's Cleveland, so I was getting bits and pieces of conversation. Everybody was talking about the Browns. People would walk by and you just hear a bit of like this. I don't know why they fired you. And you just hear like little bits and, well, then who's going to be the new offensive coordinator? Like you just like kind of heard everybody talking about it as they walked by, and I kind of was trying to piece it together that way.
Did you have a fun time in the Cleve?
I had a great time in the Cleve. I feel all jazzed up right now. Sorry if I'm talking a mile a minute. I haven't been on the show
That's
for
good.
A while.
Takes the pressure off of me.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go to sleep for the next 45 minutes. Oh. Wake me up when it's time for No Point.
Going for the real listener experience, I see. yeah, no, it was a really, it had been way too long since I'd been home. It was good to see everybody. It was just chill. There was like no like huge agenda, like there was no weddings to go to or any other reason to be there. So it was just I got to hang out with my dad a lot. We drove around. There was like one day when we had a bunch of free time in between a couple of things, like between lunch and whatever we were doing for the evening. And so I was like, let's just drive out to Valley City. This is the very rural area where I grew up. And we just drove around, looked in my old house, looked at the grade school that I went to as a kid, which is now like some sort of community center. I was not able to go in, which is probably for the better, but kind of just drove around, went down memory lane. It was great. It was really what you want out of a trip back home. Just like good to connect with people, but not like tons of pressure to like kind of get a bunch of stuff done.
That's good. And you're not in, everything is copacetic with you skipping the Halloween party. You literally traveling across state lines to avoid dressing up for Halloween.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because here at home, Genevieve was having a big Halloween party that I wanted to avoid because I do not like Halloween. Yeah, no, everything was fine. Genevieve had a good time. She said 40 or 50 people showed up. I take it you did not, Luke, but I don't know if you're under the weather.
Yeah, you know, at the last minute, I just by the time I got back from Chicago, I was kind of burned out. And also, I mentioned this on the show yesterday, but my costume I was so excited about, which was Mike Lindell, the creator of MyPillow. The more I read about Mike Lindell, the more problematic I thought dressing up as him was. So then I actually be curious to get your – I mean, you've sort of opted out of the whole costume conversation anyway because you're not into it. But I was wondering about the ethics of dressing up as someone who kind of has a worldview that I don't believe in.
I actually thought you were I thought you knew about that and were kind of doing it – I mean – not on purpose, but that was kind of adding to the humor of it.
I think the more I thought about it, the more I was like, do I want to, I don't know. I mean, not like it's going to sell more pillows for him, but, and also coincidentally, I'm resting my head on one of his pillows right now.
Are you really? Do you guys use those?
Yeah, we actually have them. Carrie bought them. And not that I want to put more money in his pocket, but they're not bad.
Did you use Tom Wassel's promo code that he gives out on 710
they're
ESPN?
Full of – each one is stuffed with over 80 crucifixes.
Oh,
so they're you can just throw it in the dryer, and it just fluffs up to be Golgotha. That's the place of the skulls, I do believe that is.
Golgotha is how we said it growing up, but I don't know that we're not.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm learning that I'm mispronouncing a lot of things, including most of the cities and valleys in Australia. So who knows if I'm saying Golgotha or Golgotha correctly. I think my dad is probably the one who called it Golgotha. My dad also calls it a latte. Instead of a latte.
Right.
So, if
we have any listeners in Golgotha or Golgotha, please get at us. Let us know how, if it might be pronounced Worcester. Who knows?
All right, let's do this. Quick break. And then when we come back, we've got some updates on rogue poopers in the news and also Booger McFarland's sideline adventure machine and a whole bunch of other stuff. So don't go anywhere. This is TBTL.
I remember this.
Hey, Sean. Better start talking because I'm sure that there's no way that this song is not full of a bunch of stuff that we need to bleep out. For some reason, I don't know, I can't remember where I was. I was in a hotel room somewhere a few weeks ago, and I just got in the mood. I listened to a bunch of Krayshawn.
Really?
Because I was bopping around the hotel room.
I forgot totally. You like hit me to Krayshawn whenever she was first blowing up. What was that, like 7 years ago? And then I went through its small Krayshawn phase, not anything of the intensity of yours. But I totally forgot about her until I typed sick into my iTunes right now and that song came up.
That's a miracle that we only heard one F word during the
Did we
four
hear
seconds
one?
That the song
I couldn't
was
even hear
clear.
I couldn't tell what she was saying.
Good. Maybe the listeners won't be able to tell either. Hey, do you actually... Yeah, I think it would be best if you... Do you have any music? I mean, Krayshawn will be great to thank the donors of the day. I noticed yesterday I had this plan. I turned yesterday's episode kind of into a version of Lay Show in that I was just playing music and kind of reading the news. And then people were telling me on Twitter that Lay Show, the Harry Shearer show, that mm-hmm. I admitted that like I like the idea of it more than the show itself. And then people were reminding me yesterday that it still exists and it's great. Mm-hmm. Some of our listeners are big fans.
It's not on KCRW. I listened to that for a year or two when I was in New Hampshire, when I was brand new to podcasts. That was one of the first podcasts I listened to. And it used to be out of KCRW, but is he doing it solo now or maybe it's associated with another station?
I think he's, but I want to say that he was doing it in New Orleans because I know that he lives in New Orleans, I think full time or a lot of the year. And I think he was doing it out of a New Orleans location for a while.
Yeah, that
easy
makes
dog.
Sense.
Rudy doesn't agree with that. I don't know if you could hear, but anyway,
I'm ready.
But what I realized yesterday is that I really got to get a new audio board because, like, I was trying to play this music and talk over it, and it was so blown out. So, note to self: I need to get some new equipment shipped out because I am basically at the point where I can't. I can't play any music. All I can play are drops like this.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
That is the only audio drop that I can now play that is not going to be blown out.
And the weird thing is that was actually Morgan Freeman saying that. So even that,
yeah,
it still
right.
sounds a little bit weird to
yeah,
the ear.
Yeah, it's still kind of a bit messed up. So fire when ready,
okay.
Whatever
Three,
music you have selected.
2 and 1.
I want everybody to get up out of your seat. And your arms together and give me some of that old soul clapping. Didn't have to love me, but you did, and you did, and you did. I thank you.
We got to thank some donors of the day, some generous folks who've been donating to TBTL. They're keeping the show going. They're making this episode happen. And they are Jennifer Siemens of San Jose, California. Susan Thaler of Shrub Oak, New York. We know Susan.
We do. She's just tweeting it.
Danielle Walsh of Walnut Creek, California. And Barbara West of San Jose, California. San Jose Barbie.
Two San Jose's. Who's been cooking the books over here?
I wonder if Barbara is like a... Is a real evangelist for the show, and I wonder if Barbara maybe told Jennifer about the show, or maybe Jennifer told Barbara about the show. There's no way Barbara and Jennifer do not know about each other. San Jose is not a big enough place for the two TBTL listeners from there, and I assume they're the only two to not know each other. Also, Megan Coughlin of Seattle, Washington. Thank you, Megan. Thanks, Megan, Barbara, Danielle, Susan, and Jennifer. Thanks for supporting TBTL. You didn't have to donate, but you did, but you did, but you did. And we thank you. You're on episode 2760.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
You know, there's one thing I have to say, Andrew. Like, I hope it's not weird for the listeners that I'm recording from bed today. I know I did this a couple of months ago. Heaven forbid that this becomes a thing. But I do realize that were I to be, sick for any extended period of time, again, knock wood, I could definitely do this show from bed. Like, I'm very lucky to have the kind of job where I could still do it even if I was recovering from something, recuperating. This would be very doable. In fact, I may just start doing it from bed every day. It's kind of nice. I've got my I got my little lemonade. We didn't have any orange juice in the house, so I've got some. I feel like I needed to throw some citrus at the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I got that going. Rudy is lying on my leg, which she's actually very heavy. This was a bad idea. I'm snug as a bug in a rug here. And I'm liking it. I may never go back to old-fashioned sitting up broadcasting.
Ah, good sit. What are your symptoms? How are you feeling right now? We're about a half hour into this. Are you starting to feel raw? I'm concerned about this, and I think we should
I woke up and I just felt – I felt flu-ish. Like, I felt kind of like I could maybe throw up, but I didn't. Had a bit of a headache. I just felt like something was coming on and was not right, and then And so, you know, I debated telling you that I was going to skip the show, but I mean, you can hear I'm fine. I'm just I have a little bit of a headache, but I'll get through it. And also, I was excited to talk to you. I really wanted to talk about Cleveland Browns football.
Yeah.
And I wanted to hear how the Cleve was. And that's another great thing about our job. Another reason to say thanks to the donors of the day. I love that I have a job I can do from bed. And I like that the job entails talking to one of my best friends about things I'm genuinely interested in, like people pooping under high school bleachers. So I didn't want to miss. I didn't want to miss this chance to talk about these things with you.
What do you mean, one of your best friends?
Well, Rich is listening now, so I have to be.
Oh, sure. Oh, okay. Yeah. For some reason, I'm not threatened by that imaginary friend. Okay. Well, if you start to feel like you're flagging, you need to let me know honestly, and we can either curtail it or we can do something else. And also, what is your plan for the rest of the week? Are you supposed to go down to Portland to record Livewire? Because I can't imagine you doing that from stage in a bed. Although now that I say it, I think that you would figure out a way to make that a bit, and it would probably be pretty good.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I'm going to see if the Livewire folks would be cool with that. Me just wheeling a bed out on stage. No, I don't actually. This is a great week for me. I don't have to travel anywhere, so I may just stay in this bed for the rest of the week and do the show. I've got the cords already run into the bedroom, so that's most of the work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually a relatively chill week. I do have to read like 90 books this week because we've got back to back live wires coming up next week, and they are part of the Portland Literary Festival, formerly known as Wordstock.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interviewing like six authors, all of whom wrote books. So that's also kind of what I'm up to right now.
And you're
let's talk a little bit about,
as far as I know.
So I know, and that's the fact that I've been able to fake it this long is honestly kind of worrisome, really, as to the quality of Livewire.
Yeah.
The fact that I would be able to, you hear about people that, I mean, all joking aside, but you hear about people, it doesn't happen as much anymore, but you hear about people who were functionally illiterate or literally illiterate who were able to fake their way through life into like adulthood by just kind of piecing it together through clues and things, which is amazing. That seems like so much more work than just learning how to read, but obviously that's not the choice that's being made. That's not how it works. It's not somebody isn't choosing to not be able to read. They're just, I guess everyone's brain is different. Some people have a hard time with it. But I remember reading a story about a guy who like worked at a grocery store. He was like a checkout guy, and he was in his like 40s, and he was totally illiterate. And finally, I don't know if he decided that he was going to try to actually just really, really learn how to read or what happened, but it was like he had gone through his whole life faking like he knew how to read, which seems like really stressful.
Yeah, that stresses me out just thinking about it. You must feel like you have a target on your back all the time, or maybe not like you have a target on your back, but that you're just walking through a minefield all the time, a minefield of embarrassment.
let's talk about the guy named Thomas Tramaglini.
Nailed
Thomas
it.
Tramaglini of Aberdeen, New Jersey. He was the superintendent of Kenilworth, which I believe is a school district there, or maybe that's when we talked about the story the first time. Superintendent, I think, is a confusing word because I think of it meaning you're in charge of the district, but I think in this case it means he might have been the principal of a high school.
Oh,
anyway,
okay.
He was involved in the school system in New Jersey, and he was accused of pooping under the bleachers at the track of a rival high school. Well, he has now pleaded guilty. Oh, by the way, I think Candy, listener Candy in Chicago, emailed us this update. So thank you, Candy. Tip of the cap. He has pleaded guilty to one count of a non-criminal municipal offense, defecating in public. He will pay a $500 fine. He has been fired from his job, which he was making $150,000 a year. So that also makes me think he must have been the principal. That's a lot of dough for a teacher in New Jersey. If you remember when we talked about this story, he would go to the track in the morning to run. He's a very serious marathon runner. But then the kids that were using the track, the kids from the high school, kept finding themselves stepping in human feces. And so the security for the school set up cameras. Actually, it might have been local police department. But anyway, they set up some cameras to try to figure out who was doing this. And sure enough, it was this school official dropping trow. He got a doctor's note. He's got an attorney representing him. And he went, apparently after he was charged, he went and saw some doctors, and he was diagnosed with a medical condition known as runner's diarrhea, which I feel like they should have a classier name for it.
Yeah.
It's like
the runner's runs is what you would have called it.
Well, actually, you know, it's funny because they talked to this article, which is the patch.com, talks to somebody. Who's a running expert, and they give some other names for the runner's runs or runner's diarrhea, including runner's trot and mud butt.
Oh, I've heard people say that last one before. I'm not even going to repeat it.
I don't think that that's what mud that's butt gross. Means, by the way. That's what that means.
I don't
because
think so
mud
either.
Butt is a situation where you've not properly cleaned the basement, as it were, but runners, you know, runner's diarrhea or the runner's runs, that is much more a case of just, you know, when you're out running and exercising, sometimes it shakes something loose. Now, I mean, I guess I feel like this diagnosis of runner's diarrhea is a bit suspect to me, because like everybody who runs has a story or two about a time when you were jogging or running and then it kind of felt like you had to go to the bathroom out of nowhere. But this guy was doing it repeatedly. And I guess what I would say to him is, if he has a medical condition that causes him to have to crap that quickly, because one of the things they point out is there's multiple porta potties at this facility. In fact, the article that I'm reading from has a picture of the porta potty that is mere steps from the track. If you have a condition where you have to go to the bathroom so bad that you're going to just, like, you can't even make it to the porta potty, find a new way of exercising.
Yeah, exactly. Find it, or you work it into your routine. Let's say that you just really love running. Well, then you could, if you have to, eventually you're going to find out, okay, about 10 minutes into a run, I have to go. I'm going to stay close to home for the first 10 minutes, maybe take a break and then move on, or know where the porta potties are. For him to have developed a routine where he knows he's going to have to go, but he's doing it under the bleachers, that's not responsible runner's butt or whatever.
I feel like he needs to just get on the elliptical, or I was going to say swim, but don't do that.
No,
Lord knows.
God.
Please, we the fellow users of the YMCA pool beg you, sir, do not take up swimming. I find this excuse to be kind of questionable. I mean, listen, I've battled some demons when it comes to bubble guts, and I will tell you, it's never been so bad for me that I could not have jogged or walked briskly over to the porta potty. I have a hard time believing that this is something that he did not want to. Like, I think there are certain people that for psychological reasons are very hard to explain. They sort of get off. I don't know if it's sexual or not, but there's some kind of weird release for them of defecating in public.
You think that's
what's
going on here?
I don't buy the story. Huh.
I didn't, you know, I really felt like, no, he knows he had to crap, but he just didn't care enough. He's like, oh, I found a private, because it's under the bleachers, right? When this story first came out, I think I was picturing him just like dropping trow kind of, or no, wait, is this under the bleachers? Because did you say
well, this
that
is what's
people
confusing.
Were stepping
so,
on it?
Yes, well, that's it. It was described as under the bleachers, but then somebody from the school that where the pooping was happening said that their students or track and field athletes were stepping in poop, quote, every single day.
Oh.
So it couldn't have been under the bleachers because, you know, because that would have been more out of the way. Like, I'm a little confused. But again, I'm looking at the photo of the porta potty, and it is so prominently you sort of positioned, like you couldn't miss it from the field. He also brought wet wipes. They would find, like, he would bring wet wipes with him to go under the, like, he was planning this out. Like, is there really a universe in which he did not know the porta potty existed and he brought wet wipes? He was jogging with wet wipes so he could then run under the bleachers and go to the bathroom.
Right.
I think this is a weird kink. And I don't mean that sexually, but I just think that they point out that story of a woman in Colorado who apologized to her neighbors or people in a neighborhood because of her frequent pooping during her runs. Same thing. It's like, I feel like there are people who, I don't think this is just a thing that's happening where they just run and then they have to go to the bathroom and there's just no better option. I think there are people that, for whatever kind of odd reason, this is something that is a release to them in some way, sort of like a lot of other weird habits people have.
I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but just generally talking about triggers, things that make you go poop. It's a great song.
And we've got our show title. I thought it was going to be Booger McFarlane's Fantastic Flying Machine. But no, it's things that make you go poo.
Maybe. I mean, I am the one who's posting the show, so we'll see.
That's true.
You know, I had mentioned this on the show before, but like there are situations that make me go, like, inexplicably, and I know about these things, but sometimes you don't think about it going into a situation, but like bookstores is one, and I know I've mentioned this and people have sent me like kind of quasi-scientific studies on this because apparently some people have looked into this and it's a phenomenon that people talk about, but there's no real good science based on it. But there's something psychological. You go into a bookstore, it's kind of like a quiet setting, especially if you go into a back corner and you're looking for a certain book and you realize you're alone in an aisle and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, get thee to a restroom ASAP. Or kind of sneaking around. I mean, I don't do a lot of sneaking around these days, I promise. But like,
well,
when you're
since
a kid,
they put the monitoring device on you, it makes it harder.
I mean, I try to. It's just the shocks that rack my body if I try to sneak. Expect a lot more of that voice on Wednesday. Are we doing anything for Halloween, by the way? Halloween is Wednesday. Are we going to do a...
I'm dressing up as Mike Lindell. I'm doing the show from bed.
Okay.
While reclining upon my pillow. This is completely... I'm sorry, you're on your way to a point here, but I just have to say real quick. I was listening to the Packers football game, the Packers-Rams game on Sunday, and I was listening to the Wisconsin broadcast because I have Sirius satellite, so I can listen to all of the local... I was doing some yard work here, and I was listening to it, and... they have, like, there's a casino Potawatomi, and they had a woman doing what was, I guess, allegedly a Caribbean accent, but it sounded a little bit like you talking about, you just kind of almost slid into a Dracula accent for a quick second there. I swear to God, this woman, some of our listeners in Wisconsin must have heard this if they listen to the Packers games. I swear to God, she was supposed to be doing, I pieced together it was supposed to be Caribbean because of what she was talking about, and they were playing steel drum music in the background, but I swear to God, it was a white lady doing a Dracula accent.
Like a Transylvania.
It was the worst Caribbean accent I've ever heard in my life, and I was like, who listened to this and thought it sounded Caribbean? It was like, you know, it was like, come to Potawatomi for Reggae Tuesday. Like, it was like the worst. It was so bad. I was like, I could not make heads or tails of it.
Maybe because it is Halloween season. Maybe they were, I don't know, trying to spooky it up a little bit.
It was strange.
Maybe she's related to me because it sounds like that's about my... Oh, just as far as the sneaking is concerned, I'm even thinking like right now, like I remember if I was a kid playing hide and go seek and like you would go and run and hide and all of a sudden you're like you're alone in a corner somewhere hoping not to get sought. Pardon me. And suddenly being like, oh no, I have to go to the bathroom and... Whoa, was that Dracula? And then it actually struck again just yesterday, I think, or the day before. I was, my parents have a nice finished basement, you know, with like they have their entertainment center down there and stuff. But then there's a door and there's an unfinished part of the basement where it's like, you know, more of a just concrete floors and there's storage back there and an extra refrigerator. And it's not, you know, kind of a nice living area. And I had to take a phone call. Genevieve called me. So I picked up the phone and I went from the nice part where we were hanging out into the kind of unfinished the unfinished basement part. And I closed the door behind
me.
I keep slipping into it, don't I? What's happening? I guess I do have the Halloween spirit after all. It's a Halloween miracle. And I closed the door behind me. Now I'm in this like quiet subterranean part of the basement or of the house. And I'm talking to Genevieve and I talked to her for like 5 minutes. I'm like, I gotta go to the bathroom. I didn't go into all the details, but it has something to do with like this. I kind of put it in that category of suddenly I shut myself off from the rest of the world. I'm in this kind of old unfinished part of the house. And suddenly my body said, "Hey, you sneaking around? Sounds like we got to go to the bathroom." And that's totally unrelatable to you, right? Like that, we've talked about this before. None of that you can relate to.
I mean, I can honestly, not to be gross, but I could go to the bathroom almost at any time. Like, I don't know. That's just not the way that if I walk into the bathroom and sit down, I can probably get some business done just about any time of the day or night, which is mystifying to Carrie. She's just like, what is going
on? That's my wife.
What is happening with you, and why are you in there so long?
For me, like that, my body can shut down for days sometimes if I'm traveling.
I was I could kind of always go to the bathroom, but that's my point about this. Again, I'm somebody who runs and has the runs. As a runner and as a person who suffers occasionally from the runs, I can just tell you that, like, if I were this high school, and by the way, he was the superintendent of a school district. I looked a little closer at the news article. So just for the people scoring at home, that was his job. He was superintendent of a neighboring school district. Which is another thing. Like, maybe this was the school that was closest to his house, but I find it odd. He's the superintendent of an entire school district. Wouldn't you think he'd want to go jog at one of the schools that was in his school district? I guess not, if he knew he was going to crap up the track.
Yeah.
It just seems weird. Like, he's not, like, you'd think if you were the superintendent, you're going to go run at 5 a.m, you'd go to one of the schools that were in your district just to kind of be, you know, boots on the ground, as it were, or, you know, Nikes on the ground, just kind of checking out what's going on in your district. I guess you wouldn't if you knew you were. What I find so weird about this is that he was he knew this was going to happen. He prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part. Like, I just feel like nobody loves running that much that you know you're also going to have to, like, every 3 miles stop and just drop a deuce wherever you are. Like, you'd get into judo or something. Like, you would just get into a different sport, I think.
Like, what is judo? Again, judo makes me vomit, though. That's the problem.
Oh, I also crap myself during judo. That's why I'm undefeated. Nobody wants to spar with me. Everyone just forfeits. This is an interesting strategy, actually. I don't feel bad for the guy. I mean, I guess, listen, there's a possibility that this is 100% as he is saying it, like he just has an unfortunate condition and he loves running and he thought he had figured out a way to kind of continue his beloved form of exercising and still, like, he maybe thought he'd worked out a system. He got caught. He certainly looks very embarrassed in the photos at the court, which, of, you know, he's got a family. Apparently his lawyer says he's gotten death threats over this.
No.
If this is really and truly just a medical thing, then I do feel bad for him. But I just something about the story doesn't add up to me. I just feel like there are other ways to handle this. Again, I've had experience with all of this stuff, and it's like, another thing is, you know, when this is struck me during a run, if I stop running, it goes away. Now, maybe that's just my body, but there's just something about the other thing is, okay, I'm sorry, Andrew, I don't mean to be gross, and then we can move on. But this is some Encyclopedia Brown shit. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I do mean Encyclopedia Brown shit.
Okay. I
cannot believe he just told that joke.
Now, think about this. If he had runner's diarrhea, if Bugs Meany really had runner's diarrhea, How could the students of the high school be stepping over human feces every day, Andrew?
In other words, if it was diarrhea, it wouldn't be.
It would be liquid.
Right. It would be
and
one
with the
soil.
It would presumably it kind of work its way into the grass, into the field, into the whatever. Like, it would be less noticeable, and like what people stepping over it makes it sound to me like this was a solid situation, which makes it sound like it wasn't runner's diarrhea. If it was runner's beautiful double tapered shit,
all right,
a la George Brett. Okay, now I've gone too far.
Yes. Will we ever be able
Objection
to...
Objection sustained.
Although I do, since we're already just in gross territory, did you share with the listeners yesterday that thing that Chris Hayes emailed us over the weekend? Did you look at that, by the way?
I did. I did not talk about it on the show. I took it to be that there are these like sugar-free gummy bears that are just give... A guy wrote a review, basically, of his intestinal distress after eating a bunch of these sugar-free gummy
bears.
Well,
no, I mean, there's hundreds of reviews, and that's the thing. I was going through them. It looks like there's a few long ones, which I kind of scanned, but there's just, like, everybody who orders these, they're called, I have it in front of me, Albanese Candy Sugar-Free Assorted Gummy Bears. Apparently, they give everybody the runs. Like, here's a review from somebody named Aaron. She says, it's all true, all of it. I ate six of these things she actually tried them to aid along in my digestion. I figured it was a tastier way to rid myself of a few weeks' worth of backup. I may as well have swallowed a nuclear bomb and topped it off with an enema, she says. Good news is my digestive system is back on track. Other people say the reviews are all true. The hilarious reviews are not just funny stories. They are true horror stories. I realized this after eating five bears. Seriously, people, read the reviews and believe them. After five. That's right, just five. I spent the rest of the night with stomach cramps. And then they kind of get funny. Somebody wrote one called There Will Be Blood. Well, let's not get into detail there. The top rated one is These things are delicious, but they make my ass sound like Chewbacca. And then some other people go into much longer reviews explaining these. But apparently, it's not just one of those things. I mean, if these are to be believed, it's not just one of those things where people are trying to be funny. But for some reason, this brand of gummy bear will give you, well, the runner's disease, as I now call it.
I wonder if this will help or hurt the sales of this product.
Right. Because you can see a bunch of kids getting them now and being like...
Yeah, my thought was like, oh my God, please, never let me eat these. And by the way, I could also see myself in 2 weeks telling you I'm on the sugar-free gummy bear diet, where you can
yes.
eat all the sugar-free gummy bears you want, but then you lose 3 pounds every hour
right.
just with what it does to your digestion. But this would be like a fun... This would be like a fun slumber party thing when you're a kid. Like, okay, you got to eat... You got to eat 1 pound of these shit bears.
Right. Or you sneak them. I mean, of course, am against trying to secretly drug your peers, but you could definitely see somebody sneaking, you know, like trying to, hey, buddy, hey, let's see, what's a good name for a kid these days? Blaine?
Caden.
No. Hey, Caden, come here. We have these new gummy bears. They're really good. Try them, you know, and then, like, I could see that being a thing. In this case, by the way, I would be the Caden in this situation, I'm sure, if I were a 12-year-old boy.
Oh, Andrew.
Oh, Caden.
Anyway, I just, back to the guy in New Jersey. He's, like I said, he's pleaded guilty. I don't know what his, you know, what his current status is other than his lawyer says his life has become a living hell. I don't know if he can get another job. I'm hoping that he did this on purpose. Because of some weird thing. Because if this really is what he says it is, this is the saddest. This is like one of the saddest stories I've ever heard. Because he's just like a normal guy, a superintendent of a school district, an avid runner, a family man, and then now he's will forever be known as the guy who kept shitting under the bleachers
right.
at the high school.
Yeah, and so
and his kids, you know, it's a shameful thing.
But at the end of the day, though, so your heart is going out to him, because I do feel though that it is something that is very like if I just you know described in detail to you my. Situation where I go into bookstores and I have to go to the bathroom pretty quickly. But you know what I do? I find the restroom or
right.
I avoid
well,
certain situations.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like the first time, like it would be like the second or third time I went to the track to run where my stomach, you know, was troubling me, and I had to stop running and go, you know, go to the bathroom. Like the second or third time that happened, I'd be like, well, I guess I'm just not a runner anymore. Or, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That's why I just find it hard to believe that this is something that was happening the way he said it was, because I think most of us would just get into something else, or we would like one of the things I mentioned in the article is a lot of it has to do with what you ate the night before. They talked to the same running expert who called it mud butt or runner's runs, says that sometimes this is like the weirdest pre-race meal. He said let me find that page exactly. Here's what he said. He said that I've been in situations training for an Ironman where we all pigged out on ribs the night before, and yeah, that sent us into the woods the next day. That's this running expert that they talked to. Who's serving ribs the night before a triathlon?
Yeah,
is what I want to know.
Ask you. Yeah,
was the triathlon in Austin, or was the triathlon in like Tuscaloosa or something? It's a weird pre-race food, but anyway. That is the update on that.
You know what they should make? Update on one last thing. You know, I was thinking, my dad's got a little in-home. It's so great, by the way. I actually got more exercise in Cleveland than I do here at my home, because my dad's got one of those pre-core home fitness, like, you know, elliptical machine. So I got up every morning and did that. Cool. Couldn't you see somebody making some sort of an exercise, like, running machine that also can facilitate runner's butt? Like some sort of a built-in toilet situation. I feel like there's money there.
Yeah, like a toilet, exercise bike, but the seat is a toilet.
Right, okay. Anyway, you were moving on, and I had to get my last dumb-ass joke in. Go ahead.
Well, it's classic Andrew Mudbutt Walsh.
Hey.
Booger McFarland is the sideline reporter for the kind of new Monday Night Football announcer crew. And for a while, and I'm not saying this to be, I'm not trying to be glib or make any kind of a joke. I, for the first game, thought that Booger McFarland I thought he was a person who needed to use a wheelchair, like a powered wheelchair. He sits, and which I thought was cool. I was like, oh, this is great. They're like expanding kind of the sorts of people that they would have as a sideline reporter. Because typically the way the sideline reporter thing works is you're standing on the sideline, you're running around, you've got a wireless microphone, you're interviewing people, yada, yada, yada. Well, Booger McFarland, and who in the world sticks with the nickname Booger? Like, I read up on this. Someone called him Booger when he was a kid. It was like a nickname in the family. But if my family nickname becomes Booger, I'm telling everyone in the family, stop calling me Booger.
Unless you're a 300-pound, you know, 6-foot whatever. What was he? A defensive end, you know? Like, something. I guess maybe like sometimes like big guys like that can have the most ridiculous nicknames and it doesn't matter. Because
well, yeah,
tough.
That would usually be Tiny. Like, you know, big guy, you nickname him Tiny. But I would like, who embraces, like, to be honest with you, I find the word very gross. I don't know why I don't find talking about bowel movements gross, but
yeah,
boogers.
You just tried to nickname me Mudbutt. Literally happened 30 seconds ago.
I know, and I'm not saying it's, Andrew, I'm sick today, okay? Please go easy
on me. You can just pull that out.
Dizzy spells. Nausea.
Your voice gets
cold
weak.
Cold sweats.
Exactly.
Andrew.
I cannot go to school today, said little Peggy Ann McKay. I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash, and purple bumps. I find that word gross, and I find it weird that, like, you would run with it, and I find it weird that it's now, I mean, I don't have a particular problem with his sideline reporting one way or the other, but it's weird to me when Joe Tessitore has to go, Booger, what are you seeing down there? Uh-huh. I'm like, really, are we doing this on national television? Anyway, for the first game, I thought that he was a person who needed the assistance of a mechanized wheelchair, because I didn't really understand what was going on with him. He's sitting in this chair, in this kind of apparatus, and it turns out that it's designed to be driven up and down the sideline, so that he can have like a bird's eye view of what's going on. Now, first of all, I'm just going to tell you, that's a bunch of bull roar. We have so many cameras now. There are so many of those things on, you know, cables or whatever. Although I assume that's all going to be replaced with drones soon, right? Wouldn't you assume?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we've got so many camera angles. It's just a gimmick, right? It's like they're constantly trying to figure out how do we make the TV viewers' experience different and better. And so somebody came up with this bright idea to put him in this gigantic mechanical contraption on the sideline that somebody from the TV crew has to drive, I assume. And he's got, you know, he's supposed to be right there on the line of scrimmage, seeing things that you couldn't see otherwise. Again, I don't really think it's a real thing. I think it's more of a gimmick. But the problem is that his contraption is enormous, and it's blocking the view of people who are sitting down in the lower seats.
Mm.
Every time he pulls up, they can't see. So ESPN's a bright idea to fix this was to put a giant flat screen television on the back of his Booger McFarland machine with the game on it. So if you paid football seats, NFL seats are not cheap anymore. If you paid you probably paid $500 to be that close to the field, and then Booger McFarland rolls up in his machine, and then you're now watching the game on the TV screen that's mounted on the back of his machine. And the more maddening part is it was apparently 6 seconds behind what was happening in the stadium.
Oh my God.
Could this be a worse idea?
No.
So he pulls up. As you might imagine, people are pissed. People have been tweeting about this or on Instagram. Let's see here if I can find. This was a guy who was mad about it. He was videotaping himself trying to get Booger McFarland to move out of his way.
Boy, you can't say I didn't have a good view of that freaking shot right there. Ridiculous. Booger, get out of the freaking way!
Apparently, everybody's been yelling at Booger McFarland from the seats because he's blocking them. So this week, apparently ESPN's fix was they took the TV screen down, and now there's like a giant clear piece of plexiglass in the back, and you can kind of see through it. It's still mostly blocking people, but it's not a video screen anymore, it's not a TV screen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody speculated on Deadspin that the plexiglass is probably there so people don't throw or people can't hit him with shit.
Oh, right, because otherwise just don't put it there at all, and you could see.
Right, exactly. Why would you even have plexiglass? Well, it's because let's be honest, probably in Philly or Boston, somebody's going to chuck a half-consumed Yingling can at Booger McFarland and hit him in the head. So they got to have this like protective thing. Apparently the NFL is fine with this. The NFL, ESPN said that they were not under any pressure from the NFL to try to fix the situation. Clearly they had to get this approved at some level. I guess the NFL is kind of doing a needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few decision on this. They're like, hey, cool, whatever. You know, millions of people are going to watch this on TV, so you're going to piss off a couple of people on the sideline, but whatever. But I don't know. I would be very annoyed if I showed up at the stadium and paid all that money and dude was chilling in front of me in his fabulous sideline machine blocking my view.
Well, what is, you know, you're talking about this piece of glass to keep, or plexiglass to keep people from throwing things at him. And the article I'm looking at here, which is, I think, from Awful Announcing, points out that, yeah, so maybe one thing it'll protect him from is people throwing marital aids at him. Did you hear about this? Like, I didn't know this is a big thing in Buffalo.
I didn't watch the video, but I saw a headline that a referee during the game, I guess last night, had to kick a sorry, children, listeners, but a sex toy. Had to like pick up or kick a sex toy like off the field.
Yeah, but they're apparently I'm looking now. I'm on SB Nation, and they're saying that this is they're doing it again. It's a tradition like no other. So I don't know when this started, but there were several of these things thrown on the field during last night's game against the Patriots. Here's a little bit of audio of I listened to this earlier. This is the thing is already thrown into the end zone, and then a referee has to kick it off. And this is some video that some people just took on their phone from the stands describing the moment.
Oh, this is
I'm not touching.
No one wants to touch it.
Oh, you know what?
He had a wrapper or something.
That sounds like people in their living room maybe taping this off of the TV. I don't know. But you can see the referee kind of kicking it off the field. This is something that I understand you don't want to just like – you don't want to just grab this thing, because even if it's clean and unused, you don't want, you know, pictures that go viral.
Rather than have
of
any
you.
Photos of you yeah. holding
right.
the sex toy
yeah.
As an NFL official.
I had to remove some sexy women's underwear that was like kind of dirty and strewn across a bike rack where we do our Sunday serve for the homeless the other week. Like, you know, we usually kind of set up some tables. We get there a little bit early. We serve the food. But, you know, while we're setting up, if there's garbage and debris around, I'll usually, you know, kind of pick it up and throw it away in a public trash can. But there's something about seeing women's panties thrown like kind of right around the area that we needed to serve the food in. And I was like, well, I guess I got to get rid of these. So I grabbed a paper towel and threw them away.
Did you use like the barbecue tongs or something?
I wish I did. Yes. And then I did not wash them. Now I grabbed a handful of paper, or grabbed a couple of paper towels and just grabbed them. But the worst thing about it, I mean, I've picked up things that I'm sure are dirtier, but you know, I don't even know if these were, you know, clean or whatever, but it's just like, it's the thought of it. And it's the idea, like, I don't want to be seen in public carrying these things around, you know. I'm also yeah. very prudish.
You know, I mean, I think I would be, I would feel a little embarrassed if I, particularly if I was an NFL official trying to maintain some. I mean, you already have no credibility with the crowd
yeah.
there,
right?
Like, the last thing you'd be doing is holding a sex toy. Anyway, I guess that the sounds like the plexiglass, Booger McFarland's plexiglass solution. Is what they're going to go with for a while. I mean, I'm honestly, like, don't get me wrong, if we get invited to go to a Seahawks game by, you know, our fine, any of our fine sponsors, Alaska Airlines has invited me and Carrie before. I know Cairo has a suite, or they had a suite at some point. So I'm not going to ever turn it down. But I honestly do not understand the appeal of, well, let me put it this way. I think I enjoy watching the game at my house more than going to the game. Which maybe that's not a hot take anymore. Maybe that's most people. But, like, I've been at the game where I've been in a luxury suite, which is as nice as it gets. And I've thought, yeah, I'd just as soon be home.
Yeah. Pausing it as I want to, rewinding it if I want to rewatch a play. I mean, that is kind of the thing. And maybe this even plays into a broader, less interesting conversation about Booger McFarland's flying machine, which is they've made the TV product, they've made the at-home product so good that they have kind of disincentivized, I think, ticket sales. Although, I mean, I think there are always going to be plenty of people who are unlike us, who have maybe a little bit more fire in their belly, who want to go there and scream and you know, go there for the full experience. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as watching the game and being able to follow what's going on, and seeing the ins and the outs, I would much rather watch it from home, which is maybe why, again, like you say, ESPN and the powers that be would prioritize the many over the few in this case. But that's a shitty attitude when you're talking to people who did spend, as you say, way too much money on these tickets.
I remember being a little kid, and my football team got to play on the field at the Kingdom. This is before Monday Night Football happened. I mean, like, it was before a Monday Night Football game between the Seahawks and the Raiders. And I was so excited because after we played, we were going to get to sit on the sideline. But it turns out that when you're sitting on the sideline and you're, like, 12 years old,
yeah,
you can't see shit.
Yeah, right.
Like, it was just like we were sitting in, like, folding chairs, and the football players, even back then, the Dave Wymans of the world, were still enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, me and my friends, Eric Pacifico, I think was his name, and another couple kids, we, like, snuck up to the 300 level and just sat. It was, like, super sold out. This was back in the days. Well, I mean, it's like that again at CenturyLink, but this was during a period of time when every Seahawk game was completely sold out. We went up and we just sat on the stairs in, like the walkway, and it was, like, soap, and we were still in our uniforms, and it was great. And I feel like I remember the team winning, but I also could be misremembering that, but I just remember being in my football uniform, sitting on the steps in the nosebleeds. Everyone was just cool with it. Like, they were like, yeah, it's fine. Like, it was also the day when, like, now you wouldn't even be allowed to do that. It'd be like a terrorist, you know, somebody from the TSA would come for reasons I don't understand and tell you can't do that. But I just remember just cheering my brains out and having so much fun. But I also remember the sideline actually not being nearly as great a place to watch the game as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are we going to do for a show title here, my friend? Are we going to go with Booger McFarland's magical sideline machine or whatever? What was the other thing you said?
Let's see. Well, yeah, when you first started the show, actually, you said Booger McFarland's sideline machine, which I like the rhythm of that. We could also say Booger McFarland's plexiglass solution, which I thought for some reason that's also funny. My seafood restaurant is going to be called Papa Salty's Seafood Machine. And then you had one involving pooping, which I don't know how I feel about that.
I'm good with, I also, Papa Salty's Seafood Machine is fine with me too. Maybe it's a little more inclusive. It's not quite as, it doesn't have booger in it.
And I can't,
and it's
or,
not football
yeah,
related.
It doesn't have booger or poop. And also, like, I came up with it on a Monday that I was going to take as a vacation day. But if I came up with that, that would be work related, which means I don't have to take a vacation day for yesterday's day off. So that would be like
perfect.
So
yeah,
that's really
all
good
of the
right
snacks
there.
You ate on the plane are a write off now.
Yes, yes. So all right. Well, let's go with that, and then we should choose some music before sliding into some no point, huh?
Yeah. Let's see. I was listening to a band. I don't know. I can't. They're called. Let's see. I saw them this morning in my early morning fever dream of waking up and being a little sick. Let's see here. What were they called?
Were they the Hamster Dance Masters?
That's exactly who it was. They had Lewis in the name, and the album was called Kids at Play. They're kind of an electronic outfit out of Chicago.
Okay.
I forget the name of the band now. Lewis the Child. I don't know. You know what? I was excited about the music, and I listened to the first track, and I kind of liked it. But I also, as I was listening to it, I was like, I don't know if everyone else is going to like this. It's sort of electro, dancey music. It's vaguely kind of Euro trashy. I don't know if I want to put that on the listeners.
Not
maybe
playing that much of it. I mean, we could,
All right.
You know, I don't think we should put that much pressure on ourselves.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. So how about we do that? How about Lewis the Child?
Okay.
We'll go out with that. And then if you want to hear even more sports talk, stick around because we'll come back with the TBTL no point conversion. Big news in the Cleve. And the Seahawks looking real good. So we'll talk about all of that. Oh, and there's some news too. Seahawks cut one of their receivers a couple minutes ago. And also Michael Kendricks is going to be able to play despite his white collar crime charges. So anyway, if you want to hear us talk sports, stick around. If not, thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. What did Rudy do?
Rue? She doesn't even know what to make of this whole thing. I'm sitting here in my underwear. Sorry. Sorry for the visual, everybody.
I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things, and then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
You know you rock when you roll with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode with his dreadlocks. Rolls and passes the ball to the end zone. Touchdown. You know we're gonna get the crown in Super Bowl 24. Team, we get the ring, the bling. Listen to the crowd sing. Seahawks, Seahawks, Seahawks. We block that offense. To say we'll lose is such an offense and nonsense. We got the best defense. Being the other quarterback comes with the expense of the act of being sacked. I hope the Broncos have enough time to react to the level of game the Hawks are bringing. That evening, a Super Bowl Sunday, cause they're gonna go all the way for the win, starting when the game begins, all the way to the end of the game, and to go down in fame as the Super Bowl champions of this year, this team should be feared.
You better saddle up when you roll with Seattle. Broncos seem like some old cattle left in the field after...
I genuinely look forward to hearing Lil Hoagie
I know.
Rap.
I
like,
know.
I honestly, like, we, you know, we've spent a lot of time with this song over the years. But I like genuinely get a pleasurable. There's a serotonin release in my brain when I hear Lil Hoagie start rapping,
and I feel like I hear something different every time. So they're leaving the Broncos in the field like a bunch of old cattle. How are the Broncos this year? I know that's not what we're here to talk about.
They're not that great, actually.
So they are like a bunch of old cattle. Okay. So,
although they did beat us the first game of the season, which kind of which is a bummer because they. I was okay with – I felt okay about that game because we actually scored some points on the road. But the Broncos are – I think they're like 2-5 or something. They're not a particularly great team now. So
well, we were warming up. You want to start with the Seahawks? Because, man, this is three really solid games in a row if my memory is right.
Yeah, they've won 4 out of the last 5 and – oh, no, wait. Yeah, we're 4-3, right? So they won 4 out of the last 5 and the loss, the sole loss, was that – shootout with the Rams, which we only lost by 3 points and came very close to pulling that one out too. So you kind of feel like that was a sort of a moral victory. Seahawks, they beat Detroit handily. They were sort of in control pretty much the entire game. They seemed to be clicking in all phases of the game. Their running game looked really effective. Now, some of that's because Detroit is, I think, kind of banged up, and Detroit's had a problem stopping the run all season. So I want to be careful about getting totally carried away with this. But I will say that when, you know, I give Pete Carroll a lot of shit, I'm like the least, like, considering he's taken us to 2 Super Bowls, I have, like, no faith in him, which is kind of dumb of me, I guess. But, like, but you know, I got to say, this is apparently, this is sort of the team... I was reading this week, that the Seahawks are now playing like the team that he and John Schneider had envisioned. And I want to say that at the beginning, I want to be honest, at the beginning of the season, I kept saying, I don't understand how this team is supposed to work. Like, they're not replacing the good players who have left with better players or even with players who are equally good. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know how we win games. And I guess the way we win games is Chris Carson. Well, first of all, our offensive line has... I don't think they gave up any sacks against Detroit. If they did, maybe it was one or something. Like, our offensive line has really improved this season. And I have to just, for somebody who's complained about it a lot, I should also say good job, you guys. Like, Jermaine Ifedi appears to be getting his shit together. Interesting article about how Dwayne Brown, who is a Pro Bowler, kind of has been, somewhat of a mentor to Jermaine Ifedi because they both were drafted. They were both high draft picks. They were both considered to be kind of busts at the beginning. And Dwayne Brown went on to kind of, you know, become a Pro Bowler. He's considered a really solid offensive lineman. And there's something about him kind of taking Ifedi under his wing a little bit that's been good for Jermaine.
Also, don't they have a new offensive line coach this year? Because the old guy, can't think of his name, was
Tom Cable,
practically ran out of town. That's maybe exaggerating a little bit.
Yeah, Tom Cable's approach was to go find, like, basically defensive linemen who weren't quite good enough to be defensive linemen and then teach them how to be offensive linemen, or get guys like George Fant, who was a basketball player in college, and just kind of teach them how to do the job. Like that was Tom Cable's approach, and it was pretty ineffective. I think we're seeing a few of the linemen. First of all, DJ Fluker has been a big improvement. I think J.R. Sweezy has gotten better, and then you've got Dwayne Brown, and then Jermaine Effetti has kind of come into his own a little bit, or at least he's managed to cut down on some of the penalties. So another thing too that they were talking about, I think during the game, and I'd never thought of this, is like pass blocking and run blocking are obviously different. Pass blocking is, you know, you hike the ball and then you stand up and you're kind of moving backwards, trying to push these guys who are running at you.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of on the receiving end of it, of the punishment.
Like a shock absorber almost, right?
Yeah, you're shock absorbing. And then run blocking is like you get to run up and, you know, hit guys and you're the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's two different kinds of skill sets. And also, I guess, you know, not having to pass block 70% of the game is probably good for these guys in a way. So anyway, to back to my original thing, I guess Pete Carroll's vision for this team was, if we can run the ball, then that takes pressure off Russell. It opens things up. It helps our receivers, who I didn't think were all that great. It gives them more opportunities because the defense has to draw up on the line because they have to respect the run, which means guys like Tyler Lockett can get loose. David Moore has looked pretty good. I don't know who what's his name? That tight end. I don't know if you had a chance to watch the game, but this tight end that I'd never heard of had a touchdown.
Not Vinette.
Nick Vinette also looked pretty good. Not Disley, but his name's... Dixon.
Because he's got the same name as the punter, and there's some confusion over that on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah, so the more on the punter in a moment. But yeah, so Dixon had a really nice touchdown catch. I thought it was like the best catch of the whole game.
Oh, cool. I didn't see that.
David Moore had a circus catch where the ball bounced off his helmet and he still managed to catch it in the end zone for a touchdown. But he was actually being less contested with than Dixon, this new tight end of ours, was. Dixon went and just pulled the ball away from the defender and had a touchdown, a really impressive one. So anyway, the offensive line's playing better. We're running the ball. It's kind of helping everything with the offense. And then it takes pressure off the defense. Our defense had some really key turnovers, too, which helped. You know, it helps when you're playing peace and love to our Detroit fans. But it helps when you're playing Matthew Stafford, who somehow usually finds a way to fork things up right at the end, the critical moment of the game. So anyway, we just looked good. I mean, we looked like a solid team. I don't want to get overly excited about it because we are about to play some seriously good teams. We got to play the Rams again. Mm-hmm. We got to play Green
Chargers
Bay.
Chargers too, right? Or am I...
Chargers. I mean, you know, Philip Rivers is you know, always racks up the yards and the touchdowns. He's very, very... He's a very good quarterback, or at least he's really, you know, he can really pick you apart. So,
and Panthers,
I don't want to get
don't
carried
have
away,
a,
but we sure look good.
Panthers don't have a great record, right? But did I hear that Cam is
no,
starting
Panthers
to come
are
into
kind of rolling.
Own, are they? Okay.
I think
Cam's having
like
a great year. So I was reading some stats. Somebody tweeted out, it might have been Mina Kimes, that like he's had Cam Newton's kind of having almost a secret or a very quiet season of dominance, that he's breaking all of his records.
Very possible. I mean, I wasn't really monitoring them much, but yeah, I know. I think I don't have their record in front of me, but I want to say they're like 5-2 now. They're looking pretty good.
So yeah, the next four games then are real. Like the Chargers, you know, the Chargers are the Chargers, but they're real this year. Then the Rams, the only undefeated team. Then the Packers. I think they're coming home. I think we're playing the Packers here. I could be wrong about that. And then the Panthers. So.
By the way, the Panthers' success can be 100% attributed to the work of Ked Woodley.
Yeah.
Dominating the foe.
Yeah.
From his backyard, and doing his Panthers rap. Yeah, we've got some good teams coming up, so I don't want to like get carried away. But watching them play on Sunday, the Seahawks, I was like, this looks like a team that is gonna maybe make a legit run at the playoffs. And confidence is such a big part of you know, any sport, but in particular football, I think confidence is such a big part of it too. To just like have a game where we were clicking like that. I don't know. I feel like it's – I honestly think that the Rams game, even though we lost, was kind of a season-defining moment for us. Like, it was like, okay, this is arguably the best team in football, and we're playing them, you know, almost to a draw here. And I think probably for some of our younger players, just to get to be in that environment and playing a team that good and stuff, I just think that that was a real turning point for us, and I think we've, you know, we've been playing pretty well since then.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think it's, you're right, it's confidence, and this is where it gets into some psychological mumbo-jumbo that you might not be totally into, but I think it's also a sense of, like, kind of swagger and fun as well, and maybe this leads into, like, what happened with that, what should have been a punt, but a fake punt that's kind of not just dominated the foe, but dominated the headlines over the weekend after this game.
That was my attempt at a cat growl. Was not good. I'm sick. Have I mentioned I'm sick?
No, I think your sickness helped that, actually. It sort of seems like when they can go out there, especially for a team when we went into this with all this, like, extracurricular talk by ex-Seahawks talking about, like, what a kind of crappy organization or how they had chips on their shoulder because of the way the coaches treated them. And, you know, like, here are the Seahawks. They let all of their, you know, Super Bowl talent walk away, and now they're just rebuilding and from nothing, and the team doesn't have a personality, and now the team does have a personality and they're having fun out there while they're winning, or at least in the case of the Rams, really kind of giving a good showing. I think that plays into the psychology too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. So, oh, and the receiver that they cut was Brandon Marshall, which I didn't, you know, I like, this is like kind of off the field stuff, but one of the things I admire about Brandon Marshall is that he's been very open about the fact that he was sexually abused, which is a, like, you know, back when he was playing for, I think, the Jets, maybe, or it might have been the Bears. I just thought that was a really,
he wasn't abused then. He was,
abused
as a kid,
but just like talking,
right?
About, he was talking about, yeah, his personal experience. Which I thought was a very brave thing to do in the culture of the NFL.
Yeah, wow,
and he was,
I didn't,
an amazing,
know that,
receiver. He's the 16th all-time receiver in the NFL. I don't know if that's for yards or catches or whatever, but he was a perennial Pro Bowler, and he was great. But you know, those sorts of big receivers like a Chad, you know, like, you, there's a reason that nobody has tried to pick up. Oh man, how am I going to forget his name? The Dallas Cowboy receiver that got cut.
He even didn't even visit the Browns facility.
It'll come back to me.
Okay,
but
whatever.
See how quickly we forget these things. Anyway, big receivers, these big athletic receivers who can be so amazing, I feel like when they hit their kind of expiration date, they really expire quickly. And so when Brandon Marshall came in, I was kind of like, I don't really know how much he's going to add. And I guess I didn't know this off the top of my head, but I guess he has had four drops. He has had, in the last two games or whatever, he's had two catches and four drops. And with David Moore playing really well, and with that new tight end, I know that Brandon Marshall doesn't play tight end, but with, Doug Baldwin is back and Tyler Lockett is looking great. I just think there probably just wasn't really room for him, so they cut Brandon Marshall.
And I didn't really know about Brandon Marshall much before this.
Dez Bryant, by the way.
Dez Bryant, right. Before this season. So where did we get him from? What was his last team?
He was just, I am going to say the Jets.
But he's just been around a lot, right? He's
Yeah, he's played for a bunch of different teams. And again, he has been a really good receiver in his time, but he's just not. I think he got hurt and got cut by somebody, and then he was just kind of out there available, and then we picked him up. But I never thought he was going to be you know, the answer to the problems we were having. And David Moore is looking really good. And you know, Doug Baldwin's back, and Tyler Lockett. I have to say, like, I was kind of worried that Tyler Lockett, because he got that gruesome injury, I was kind of worried that he, like, permanently lost a step, but. Because he kind of was like, he was so promising as a rookie, and then he got hurt, and then I felt like he kind of never got back to that. Mm-hmm. But he is really, I mean, once a game, he catches a touchdown, usually a long pass. He just gets behind the defense. And so Tyler Lockett has kind of surprised me and impressed me this year. So
that's cool.
All of that to say, exciting times. exciting times in Seahawk land, and also interesting times in Cleveland Browns land. What is that? Isn't that the old, like, the old curse? May you live in interesting times.
May you live in interesting Browns times. Yeah.
Yeah. So how you feeling?
Well,
Hugh Jackson fired.
Let me begin from the beginning. So okay. I was born in 1976. No, let's start with the game. I was in Cleveland for this game, not to watch the game. Actually, this week's game was against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. But I was just looking forward to, like, kind of, you know, watching the game with my folks. And actually some other family came over, some Browns fans, to watch the game. And I had just been really, really looking forward to it. And I told my folks, too, I think I mentioned to you on the show last week, that the last time I watched a Browns game at their house, they kind of wanted to pause it and then come upstairs for snacks, right, and stuff. And so I told them this time, I'm like, you guys can do what you want, but, like, I'm going to personally watch the game live, like, even if I have to put on my
computer. I'm going to be down here, like, watching the game and occasionally sneaking off to shit.
Right. You might notice that I've brought a special chair into the living room.
It is a exercise bike, a toilet.
Yes. It's an all-purpose. Anyway, and the Browns, as you know, have been, you know, terrible for a long time, but this season are showing sparks, and they definitely have a lot of pieces as far as players are concerned who are very exciting, and the team could be very exciting, but they've been in a slump. They've been losing games that they should have been winning after actually winning a couple, and they've, you know, I think lost three of their last four or two of their last three, and have actually been looking a little bit worse and worse. And I don't know if you know this, you know, I was kind of following this pretty closely leading up to this game, that there was, you know, rumors of some kind of bad blood between Hugh Jackson, the head coach, and Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator. And there are a lot of rumors swirling that Hugh Jackson's days might be numbered. And I didn't know this, that there's a long, let's call it, tradition of Browns coaches being fired after the second Steelers game of the season. Of course, the Browns are in the same division.
Oh, wow.
They play the Steelers every year twice, as you do your division rivals. And I guess the past six Browns firings all happened after the second Steelers game of the season. And I didn't know that. The Browns have not won on the road in 25 games since 2015. So a lot of people were saying, if Hugh Jackson is going to go, it will probably be after this game, or maybe you wait two more weeks and you wait for the bye week. And again, there had been this sort of public bickering between Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley, although they both kind of denied it. There was definitely a power struggle going on for who controls the offense. And I understood why Hugh Jackson's job would be on the line after, you know, his record of 3-36-1 or whatever the hell it is. That's not exactly right, but close. And I didn't understand why you would fire the offensive coordinator. Well, after the really bad, humiliating loss on Sunday, it was just a shit game. I mean, the Browns looked really bad. It wasn't the most torturous game of the season, because it wasn't one that took you to the end and it looks like you could win and then you lost at the last minute and you wanted to go outside and fall on your saber. We keep sabers around just in case. Was the type of game that I was really looking forward to. I just thought, like, maybe this is where the Browns get their mojo back. We go down to Pittsburgh and we just have whatever magic it needs and we show that we are not the Browns of old. Well, it was the Browns of old, like, you couldn't believe. Like, they started off pretty good, had a good drive down the field, but they couldn't convert it into a touchdown. They controlled the first drive so well, but had to take a 3 points. Then defense stops the Steelers right away, 3 and out. Wow, looking good. Pretty sure the next drive for the Browns, or maybe the one after that, again, control it, go down the field, seem strong. Can't get a touchdown. You take the field goal and the 3 points. And then all of a sudden, as you would guess, then the Steelers turn it on. When you're only getting field goals and it's 6-0 and it seems like you've been kind of dominating the quarter, all the Steelers have to do is get one touchdown to take the lead, and that's exactly what they did. And suddenly the Steelers just turned it on near the end of the first quarter, and they never looked back, and they just destroyed the Browns. I mean, the second half, it looked like our defense, which is our kind of shining point, it looked like they just went in for halftime and then had a meeting and said, we're not going to try anymore. Let's just not get injured. Like, it was just so weird. There was no pressure. There was no nothing. The Browns ended up losing. What ended up happening was on Monday when I was at the airport or heading to the airport, not only did the announcement come out that Hugh Jackson was getting fired, but also Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator. I thought for sure he would take over interim head coaching responsibilities, but it turns out it has something to do with the organizational chart of the Cleveland Browns and the kind of power dynamic with the ownership of Jimmy Haslam and the kind of loyalties therein that I think I've bored the audience enough today. I don't have to get into huge details about that, but like Hugh Jackson was kind of the owner's guy, and you have this guy John Dorsey who's in as general manager, and he's a real football guy. People really trust him, but he wasn't able to pick his own head coach. He was kind of stuck with Hugh Jackson, and so then they brought in Todd Haley to kind of, I don't know, do the play calling. But either way, these were a bunch of guys who were not on the same team, and you gotta kind of trust John Dorsey. He's in a position of power there, and he knows what he's doing. And he finally just told the ownership, like, no, we gotta just clean house. And I think if I could sum up why they just fired both in the middle of the season like this, and we're now gonna have interim coaches, you're like, well, that's not going to be a winning mentality for the rest of the season. What's the point of it? It sounds like the point of it is protecting Baker Mayfield, the rookie quarterback who could really be the future of this team, and not putting him in a position where there's this ongoing quasi-public battle for power of the offense between two coaches. And every week you got to trot Baker Mayfield out after probably another loss in front of the media, and him having to take sides, and him being in the middle of all of this. Even if going with interim coaches for the rest of the season doesn't lead to a lot more wins, at least you're kind of not breaking your young, you know, quarterback of the future by at least getting everybody on the same page and hopefully getting some folks in there next year who can, you know, maybe finally start to really build something. Because there's so many good pieces, but the players, like even Myles Garrett, the defensive star, has been kind of throwing some shit during press conferences. It's like they feel like there's this impending or present culture of losing that is starting to seep into everybody, and they want to kind of protect these young players, these young, really talented players, from this, you know, infection of negativity and all of that that goes along with it.
That all makes sense to me. I mean, you know, Hugh Jackson seems like a nice enough guy, but geez, Louise, there just was no, like, I just wouldn't feel confident if I was a player. I mean, you just can't, I mean, like, what about Hugh Jackson's record or skill set would – I mean, I'm just amazed he survived. Like, you have one season like Hugh Jackson had, and you usually get fired in the NFL, unless you're like Bill Belichick or something. Like, the fact that he survived three seasons and got this far into his third season is amazing to me. And again, he seems like a nice enough guy. He should probably go be – I don't know what he was before, a defensive coordinator.
No, offense. He's an offensive guy.
I mean, he should probably go be an offensive coordinator somewhere. Maybe go be a college coach.
College, yeah, like, I think.
Like, he seems like a likable dude. You know, like, I'm sure that the college students will buy his BS, you know, as opposed to, like, grown-ass millionaires who are, again, not that the players were, like, openly hostile towards Hugh Jackson, but, I mean, just, you do get into a sort of, you know, you get a mental rut, a pathway worn when you just keep losing over and over and over again. You keep looking to the sideline as the same guy trots to the midfield to shake hands with the coach after you've lost again. Mm-hmm. I just think you're right. This isn't going to – although, who are they playing next week?
The next two games are going to be disasters. Two games before the bye. They got to play the Chiefs next week.
Oof.
And then the Falcons, and I don't know exactly what the Falcons are doing, but I think they're pretty good.
I was going to say, watch, they'll go win next week.
No.
The Browns will, just because.
The Browns will not be the
Chiefs.
It could
happen.
Really?
It could happen. Well, I mean, look, the Chiefs are not invincible, and I think Mahomes is due to have an off game at some point. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, usually when teams, maybe it's more of a basketball thing, when teams fire their, I know that in basketball this always happens. When a team fires its head coach in the middle of the season, they usually win like five games in a row after that. just because I don't know why. There's just some energetic shift that happens. But maybe that doesn't apply to the Browns. Maybe that
yeah,
apply to
because the Browns have fired a lot of coaches, and that has not happened. But what was I going to say? Oh, do you know that the Cavs also fired their coach this weekend? On Sunday, the Cavs fired their coach. His last name is Lou. And then on Monday, they fired Hugh.
Oh, sure.
Lou and Hugh.
Yeah, Tyronn Lou. Yeah. Tyronn Lou was a player. He played for Nebraska in college. Mm. He was a college basketball player, and then he was a little teeny guy. I want to say he was like 5'6" or something. It sounds like the Cavs are just in utter disarray since LeBron left. Unfortunately, so the Cleveland's having sort of the opposite of Boston right now. Boston wins the World Series. The Patriots are rolling again. Everything is good in sports town in Boston, and everything is kind of seems like it's falling apart in Cleveland. But I get the feeling you don't sound that upset by this. I mean, I think you've always been looking, and probably most Browns fans at this point have had it beaten into them. You're kind of looking two seasons down the road here. So it's just like whatever gets you to being – whatever gets Baker Mayfield, you know, the most experience and the best kind of experience, and Myles Garrett and Nick Chubb and the rest of them, whatever kind of makes them the best players that they're going to be in a season or two from now is really what matters to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely disappointed. I guess I was more disappointed with the Steelers showing. I mean, the team – actually, that was kind of a quote that was going around. Is apparently, when the team fired – when management fired Hugh on Monday, they told him it was very clear that your team had given up on you in the game. And so seeing the really messy Steelers game really bummed me out on Sunday. I had just been looking forward to that game for so long. I just kept thinking about it all week. Like, oh, I just can't wait to watch this game in Cleveland. And so the firings, I think, kind of had to happen. Now, I will say, you said that you're surprised he kept his job for so long. I'm really glad that they gave him a chance of more than a year or even 2 years. They gave him 2.5 years. I mean, the Browns also had a problem of firing coaches constantly. Pat Shurmur, right. I'm just going back. I don't have this on the top of my head, although, like, you had Eric Mangini for 2009.
The man genius?
The man genius. Shurmur, 1 year. Or I guess 2 years. One and change. Chudzinski, 1 year. Pettine, one and some change. Hugh Jackson, they finally gave him like a little bit of time. And so that's kind of a problem too. You can't build a culture. But so I'm glad that they really gave Hugh a chance. You can never say that they didn't give him a chance and that they're just going back to this culture of a revolving door of coaches. And now it's time to move on. And Greg Williams, the somewhat controversial.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate
defensive coordinator.
That's the unfortunate part of it all.
A lot of people are saying that. I got to say, I think I'm tainted by my Browns fandom. I mean, I know that what he did with the Saints, with the Bounty Gate thing, was a big problem. Being a Browns fan, though, seeing him come in and turn around our defense, I guess I just kind of used my brain, I guess, build up some walls around my moral code, because I was kind of like, well, he did his time. He had to spend a year out of the league, and now he's turned half of our team around, and so now he's taking over the team, and everybody's like, how can you let this guy have another chance at being a head coach, even an interim head coach, if he's such a horrible person? Is that what you were going to say? By the way, I cut you off.
Well, yeah, he just seems kind of like an old school kind of football asshole. Like, I mean, the Bounty Gate thing, if I remember right, was basically that he was there was like a reward for injuring other players. Was that the
yeah
was it knocking him out of games or injuring
knocking him out of games? And apparently, I mean, it's shitty, man. I mean, it is. I'm not trying to. When I say that I was looking past it, I'm not saying that you should look past it. I'm saying that I'm a bad person for looking past it, because yeah, apparently, like, there was a pool of money and players would get chunks of money depending on how a player, if they hit a player and got them to leave a game, like apparently there was a special bonus if they were carted off the field. I mean, that's that's terrible. That is awful. That's everything that's bad about the sport. So I guess I understand why people feel like Greg Williams shouldn't have been given another chance.
Let's see. Anything else that you want to? We never talked about Michael Dixon. But what I was going to say, not to take it back to the Seahawks.
Oh no, we should. I want to talk to you about that. Yeah.
That was a pretty crazy play. I think he was supposed to run around in the end zone and just kill time.
And get a safety.
I don't really understand. Yeah, take a safety, which is kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, they had a plan in mind, and I guess it was because they were up by two scores, and even if they gave a safety away, they were still going to be up by two scores. And what it would allow them to do is basically trade 2 points for being able to punt the ball from wherever you punt the ball after a safety. So,
like the 20 or the 25-yard line, as opposed to having to punt it from the very, very back of their end
zone. Back of the end zone. And so, but I mean, what's interesting about it is, like, everybody's like, you know, la leyenda de, how do you say balls in Espanol? The legend of Big Balls Dixon is growing. Because, you know, he gave a quote to one of the reporters from the local paper asked him, you know, somebody said he had balls, and he goes, yeah, I've got big balls.
You know, that's a misquote, like, though. Like, that's a big scandal.
Oh.
I mean, it's kind of a, because
oh,
people were like, Danny O'Neill was, because somebody quoted him on that and tweeted it. He literally tweeted back, I don't know where you're getting that quote from, but that wasn't me. And then some other people.
I thought that was surprising.
The
I
local
thought that
station.
Didn't seem really like the kind of thing he would say.
And the local other local station, not 710 ESPN, but KGR said, you know, we have it on tape. And then Danny O'Neill at 710 tweeted out, yeah, no, this is bunk journalism. Like, listen to the full quote. And what he never said that, yeah, I have big balls. He said, yeah, you know, after the play, I'm not going to do the Australian accent because I'm not you.
Listener Linda, please transcribe
yes.
what Andrew's going to say and then call us back and do it in an Australian accent.
He's just saying, yeah, after the play, they were, you know, all the players on the bench were like calling me names. Like, and then he kind of listed a couple and he kind of said big balls. Or something like that. And it was just kind of like the way they took that quote to, yeah, I got big balls. I'm big balls. What's his name? Big Balls Dixon. Like, that was totally blown. This whole thing is totally blown out of proportion.
What I was going to say, though, is that, like, everybody's, you know, loving that he did that. But I'm here to tell you, if he almost didn't pull that off, it was not a, like... That was not a gimme, and in fact, he had to, like, run through a dude to get the first down. Had they tackled him, I'm not saying, like, I mean, all's well that ends well, and, it's, you know, it's a much more fun for it to have worked out this way than the alternative, but, like, what I feel like I haven't heard anyone say is, like, he was really rolling the dice. Like, if he gets tackled after eight yards and doesn't get the first down, we're basically giving them a touchdown, and we have gone, you know, we've, like, put ourselves in a really precarious position. So, like, I'm glad it worked, and I know this is weird. I'm, like, snatching defeat from the mouth of victory here, but it's, like I think it's kind of funny that everyone's all psyched about it, and it was a cool play, but I'm like, damn, I'm retroactively still nervous about that decision by Dixon because, like, basically, we were in a game it was almost impossible for us to lose. The only thing that could lose us that game would have been Dixon getting tackled at our 9-yard line and turning the ball over on downs. That's literally the only bad outcome. Everything else, taking the safety, punting it, all of that is fine. The only bad thing is if he gets tackled without the first down. That almost happened.
Yeah, it seemed weird to me because they said that, you know, maybe take the safety because a blocked punt returned for a touchdown would be worse. And I didn't watch the game live, by the way. I had it on a computer. They were playing at the same time as the Browns, and I had it on a computer, and I happened to look over at that moment when this was happening with the sound down. I was like, what is going on with the Seahawks? I later was reading about it, and apparently, did you know the backstory of kind of how he was empowered to do this? Did you read about that at all?
No.
Apparently, according to one piece I was reading, he was in the airport flying back from the London game. Was that last week or 2 weeks ago they played in London? Two weeks ago,
played the Raiders.
And apparently he's in the airport, and Coach Pete Carroll comes up to him and says, you know, if you ever see an opening, like, you should feel free to, like, kind of run it. If you see the opening, you know, I trust you to take it. And he's like, okay. He's like, probably my special teams coach doesn't agree with that. So he goes to his special teams coach and says that Pete Carroll told him that. And the special teams coach, whose name I don't know, do you know it? He's apparently
I don't know. I actually don't know who the special teams coach is anymore. I stopped paying attention to that when it stopped being Rusty Tillman in the 80s.
Well, apparently he said, well, you know, Coach Carroll said that I should run it if I see the opportunity. And the special teams coach is like, no, that is not your job. But apparently in this moment, he's got the ball. Like, this was not something that was planned going into this. He was just supposed to take the safety, like you said. But he saw an opening and he heard Pete Carroll's voice in his head, maybe not unlike Homer Simpson hearing Marge Simpson's voice echoing through his head. And he just saw an opportunity and he took it. So it was completely his decision, which is certainly very, very risky. And I mean, just think about how we'd all be talking about him today. But this whole story behind him is just so weird. This just seems like such a Seahawks. It almost seems like a 2013 Seahawks story, sort of. Just like, we just have this one punter who comes from a different game, Australian rules football, and he sometimes bounce kicks the ball and he does all these things, and he's so far just been really dominant at this one specific position.
Yeah, no, I have to say that everything about that game, that's a good comparison. It felt like the Seahawks when we were like, you know, kind of invincible and also always sort of found some weird way to pull shit out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt much more like that team, which is great, which is like a fun thing. Like I'm saying, though, I don't know why I'm focusing on the negative here, but it's like, I kind of feel like, honestly, we were going to win the game if he took a knee in the back of the end zone and then mm-hmm. punted it. Like,
sure.
We were going to, what was going to happen is they were going to have the ball, they were going to need two scores, they were going to have one timeout, and they were going to need to go the length of the field twice. That's an impossibility. So, honestly, the upside, like, what was the upside? We had the ball on the 10-yard line and we could then take a knee there. Like,
yeah,
it just kind of, I mean, it did effectively end the game, but it took the game from being like 99.9% a win to 100% a win. But the alternative is, if he would have gotten tackled at the 7-yard line, it would have moved it back into being like a 60% chance we were going to mm-hmm. win, or a 70% chance. Like, I didn't feel like the risk was not worth the reward on that one.
Yeah, logically I agree with you, but I guess I'll just choose to like kind of live in the reality of what did happen. And you know, I'm happy with it, and I hope that we continue. I hope we end up having a dominant season, and we look back on this as one of those cool moments.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm being. Taking like a fun play and being weird about it. But
no,
I
think you're right, though.
Looking back on it, I was like, well, what is the upside of doing that? But it was cool. It was fun to watch.
I
feel a little bad for John Ryan because, like, you know, John Ryan was kind of, you know, he did Ultimate Ninja Warrior. He threw that touchdown pass in the Green Bay
game.
He was kind of
beloved.
He's sort of a beloved local figure. And, you know, and now it's like everyone's just like, John who?
Yeah, I know. He's such a good guy. I bet you I bet you he's happy for Dixon, or I hope he's happy for Dixon. Can I say one thing that I learned? So I've always thought of safeties as just being like just the worst, because not only have you chances are you got sacked in the end zone, or maybe you actually the what I'm going to lead to here is you know, you get a penalty in the end zone and that, like a hold or something, and that's considered a safety, and that happened to the Browns. But not only do you know, lose 2 points or give the other team 2 points, then you have to give the ball back to them and you have to kick it away. I never realized this, and apparently other people didn't realize this either, that the kickoff or punt after a safety is not a kickoff or a punt. It's something called a free kick. And the Browns ended up, you know, sacrificing 2 points and getting a safety this weekend because of somebody held in the end zone. It was that kind of a game. And then they kick the ball away like you have to do. But it was a pretty good kick, and the Steeler receiver doesn't touch it, just lets it bounce towards the end zone, thinking this is going to be, you know, there's not a lot
like
I can
do
with this. Yes. And
it's more like a kickoff, right?
It's something called a free kick. I don't know what it is. Apparently,
right.
the Browns can, like, you know, the kicking team can rush down and grab it and run it into the end zone. Now, clearly the Steelers didn't know this because they didn't touch the ball and protect it. But unfortunately, the Browns didn't know it either, because the Browns ran down and jumped on the ball, like, I think around the 30 or the 20.
Like, downed it?
Like, kind of downed it, which was good because the Browns ended up getting the ball back. So that's kind of cool. But they could have just picked
it up. They could have run it in the end zone.
And run it right
into
the end zone.
Honestly, no offense. I don't know who would be offended by this. But, like, that's like a fireable offense on the special teams coach, because mm-hmm. there's not that much to know about the rules of football as they pertain to special teams. That's one that's going to come up. You got to drill that into your players. Yo, dudes, there are three kinds of kickoffs, right? There's a punt, there's a kickoff, and there's this thing, the free kick. And BT Dubs, you can recover that one like a kickoff. Like, how did that not come up at some point? It's not like, I mean, the Packers had a safety, or they were, you know, the Rams got a safety on the Packers, that Potawatomi vampire game I was listening to. Like, it comes up a lot. You'd think that special team players would know that.
Yeah, or even if you didn't, like, practice that drill a lot in practice, like, if you're the special teams coordinator, can't you gather everybody around really quickly and remind everybody before you send them on the field, don't forget, this isn't punt rules here. If you have the opportunity, grab that ball and get it into the end zone. You'd think that you could, like, do that, smack them on the ass and have them run out on the field. I really want to focus on the smacking of the ass part of that. Hey, sure. Let me ask you a question before we go about a different game. Because I was only half watching, but did you watch the Vikings-Saints game by any chance on Sunday Night Football?
I was following it on the radio. I was having we were having a birthday dinner for my mother-in-law at a Mexican restaurant in Cedro Woolley. So I was kind of watching it over everyone's shoulder rudely in the bar.
Okay.
But anyway, what were you going to ask about?
Well, there was just one catch at the beginning when the game was still in hand. And of course I root for, the Vikings.
Sure. And for the Stubot.
Sure. Of course. And, I just don't understand how there was this catch that was ruled a catch by the Saints that it just seemed so obvious to me. And I was only kind of half watching. I was talking with my family. The game was on. They showed the replay a few times. And it seemed so obvious that the receiver used the ground, like a big chunk of the ground, and slid to catch the ball. And it was a huge reception that set them up for a touchdown, I believe, the next play or in the next couple of plays. And I just do not understand how that was a catch. And I was hoping that maybe you saw it, because I was going to ask you that today.
I didn't see it, but I will tell you that the Seahawks had a play that, if I remember right, now, of course, I'm forgetting who it was, but we challenged. It was called a non-catch, and we challenged because the guy caught it, took three steps, and then fell down. He was juggling the ball, then fell down. It might have been Vanette. And then fell down, and then the ball hit the ground. But they're under the new rules of a catch, which seem to mostly make catches harder and harder. Like, you know, it's harder and harder to, like, decide something is a catch now. This one weird rule where it seems to make it easier is if you basically catch the ball and then when you fall to the ground, it hits the ground, but you've already established it was a catch, it doesn't matter. So there was this weird play where we challenged and we got the catch. We got the first down. Even though under what I felt like the old rules of football, it would not have been a catch. So for all of the ways that catches are now more difficult to prove, officially, there's just one weird way. So maybe that was part of it too.
I see.
The ground is not like an automatic. It's not an automatic incompletion if it hits the ground anymore.
If you've made like your quote unquote football moves and now you're no longer a receiver, but you're a ball carrier, and then the ball hits the ground, and I could see slowing the tape down to the point where you say, oh, okay, well, the catch was made here, the football moves were made, now you're just a ball carrier, and then the ball hits the ground. Well, in this particular one, it looked pretty egregious, and I was very upset on behalf of the hardcore Saints fan, certainly, and the sound was down, so I never got a full explanation of it, but...
One other thing, I don't know the detail, I just saw the headline, but Michael Kendricks can play at the end of the season. I think his suspension is like eight or nine games, which means he's already served some of them. Mm-hmm. And he will, which is kind of great, actually, because first of all, I'm not that mad at him for insider trading. I mean, I know that people can get their lives ruined by that, but I just feel like, you know, I feel like white people have been doing that shit for a long time. It's like, I don't know, just at the least... It's the least threatening crime. I mean, he's also paid the money back and apologized. So I don't feel like we're putting, as you said, I think on the show, Frank Clark is a more problematic player for us to have on the field, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, so I'm glad he's going to be able to play for us. And he's been pretty solid. He was pretty solid in the couple of games he played.
Yeah, I thought we might talk about this on the show today. So while I was cleaning up after lunch, I was really thinking about him. And really trying to ask myself, would I feel the same way? Like, you and I are both on the same page that we just don't take the insider trading thing. Not that it's not a crime that people should be punished for. Not that it should be legal. But from a football standpoint, the fact that you and I are pretty dismissive of it and saying, yeah, I think he should still be allowed to play football and it shouldn't affect his career too much. I was wondering, like, would I feel that same way if he played for a different team? And I was really trying, and I really honestly think that I'm not letting my bias get in the way here. Now, if it was the Patriots, who I feel like get away with a lot of shit, maybe I would be a little bit more eye-rolly about it, but I still don't think I would be thinking that he does not deserve to play. He's going to serve a suspension, and then I think he should be allowed to play football, and I'm fine with it, and I honestly think I would say that no matter what team he was on.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he had to pay the money back, I assume, with fines. He apologized. He is going to be sentenced. He could get, like, 3 years in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not paying, you know, for this crime. Like, and again, it's like, I just feel like with all this bullshit that goes on with this finance stuff and all of the, like, you know, all the major American financial institutions that collapsed because of, like, bullshit loans that were enriching people, none of those people went to jail. I don't know. I just feel like I think I would feel the same way if he was on any team other than the Patriots.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Again, peace and love. Listen, I realized last night I had to actually do some kind of like a fierce moral inventory of like I was watching Monday Night Football and I was just so mad at the Patriots. And I was just like, I even said yesterday on the show, I said, look, no offense, Boston fans, but if there is a loving God, he will make the Patriots lose Monday Night Football tonight. I know that, like, if it was the Seahawks, if the Seahawks were really good and the Mariners were really winning the World Series, I would be stoked about it. So, I mean, I don't have any reason to be mad at Boston fans. I'm just tired of them winning.
Yeah.
It's not a good argument and it's not a good look on me. So for our Boston fans who probably feel like I'm always shit talking them, I am. And I recognize that it's not logical. It's just me feeling like, okay, you've had enough.
Yeah, and whatever. I mean, and it's also sports. Like, I actually love the city of Boston, and I would gladly move back there. I never actually lived in Boston, but Genevieve did, and I spent a lot of time there when I was living in New Hampshire. I love Boston as a city. But, you know, people, when the Seahawks were kind of winning, you know, not kind of, when the Seahawks were winning for several seasons in a row, there were a lot of people around the country who really hated Seahawks fans, and they thought that they were kind of Johnny-come-latelys and pretty obnoxious, like this team that was kind of ignored for a long time. Now you have this really obnoxious fan base, and you know what? They were probably right. Seahawks fans were probably pretty obnoxious. Maybe we were too. And you know what? You should have hated us then as fans and maybe made fun of our fan base. And that never really kind of – it kind of felt good to me to be rooting for a team that had a reputation for having a cocky fan base because I never knew it was like to root for a team like that before. You know,
right.
Like it's just part of – you know, you're winning, you know, and so you take the good with the bad on that. I would rather have a winning team that people hate the fan base of than have a losing team that people feel sorry for like the Browns.
I know some of our Minnesota fans, including the Stubot, will recoil at hearing this. I think the best fan base in football is the Green Bay Packers fans. One, I love people from Wisconsin. Again, I know that there are rival teams that probably can't stand Packers fans and probably can give me a long list of annoying Packers fans' behaviors. But I remember when we beat them on Monday Night Football in what was called the Fail Mary Pass, mm-hmm. Golden Tate, who, by the way, is going to the Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking news. Like, when we won a game against them that should have never been our game, it was this weird moment of, like, replacement refs and like a botched the game was stolen from the Green Bay Packers, and the Packers fans who had like come to Seattle to watch the game paid a bunch of money, like they handled it with such dignity in my mind. I was talking to some of them, you know, like, and they were getting jeered and yelled at by Seattle fans, and I was just kind of like, you guys, let's all of us Seattle fans, let's just quietly walk to our cars because we just stole a win. I love Packers fans. I just love people from Wisconsin. I also love people from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. I have some issues with the Manitowoc County Sheriff's Department, but aside from that, I think the people of Wisconsin are great.
Well, you know what? I may share those issues with you after I watch Making a Murderer, which I'm gonna. You know what I'm gonna do? We're gonna wrap the show up. I'm going to go eat another piece of my vegetarian lasagna that I made yesterday that I was very proud of. I've kind of got my appetite back, so that's good. And then I'm going to get right back in this bed, and I am going to watch Making a Murderer.
Well, let's talk a couple of business things I want to talk to you about here, which we probably should have talked about during the main part of the show. Well, quickly, number one, don't forget you have books to read. Number two, I almost wonder if you should like take some time to watch as much of Making a Murderer as possible, so we can maybe make it a segment on the show and we can talk about it, because we did it for the first season and I think there's a lot of I have kind of mixed emotions about this season. Like, you watch it and you definitely things seem so obvious, and then but I think that I'm getting a little bit swept up in the point of view of the documentary, and I think we could have some conversations about how much we can trust the documentary and the characters in it. So maybe you should at some point watch it, and we can make it like a TBTL topic, but I also want to make sure that you read your books for your other show. Do your homework.
You know what? I've got nothing but bedtime. I think I can get all of it in. I've got a hard day of doing nothing, and I know listeners who are chasing three children or working four jobs, including DFTB, who now board ops at Cairo all week and then does the graveyard shift, also works at Starbucks, I think still works at Cafe Lago to some degree. I know people are like, shut up about laying in bed. But anyway, I think I can get it all done, so don't worry. And if I, you know, maybe I take a few days to watch Making a Murderer. But
and the other thing that sorry. I thought you were done.
Nope, keep going.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. The other thing that I want to talk to you about TBTL-wise is, are we still thinking about next week doing a 5 a.m. wake-up call every day and maybe like recording at 7?
I was thinking of maybe trying to do it the week of the 12th, because I'm going to be in Chicago again next week.
I'm
actually going to be in Chicago doing Wait on the 8th, and then I go to Boston for like 3 hours to interview a guy about tater tots, like you do, and then fly to Portland. So I was going to propose maybe the week of November 12th through 16th, and what I thought would be fun, and of course we're burying this at the end of the show, but we can bring it up tomorrow. I know a lot of the listeners are into this. I think we should do this as like a sort of system-wide project. So in other words, we'll get up at 5. Any listeners that have the ability and the flexibility or whatever to do it can do it. We'll all just kind of like get together and do this thing and see, you know, see how it treats us. So I was thinking the week of the 12th, if you're up for that.
I'm looking at my calendar now, and it looks like there's nothing getting in the way of that. I will give a spoiler alert. We will be advertising Quip Oral Care and RX Bar that week. That's the only thing that's on my calendar. So
those are going to be some of the best ads we've ever recorded, because we'll have been up for 7 hours.
Exactly.
We'll have been up for 15 hours before we record them. So.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, listen, thanks, everybody. Oh, we just crossed the river twice.
Oh, nice.
Yay for us.
Hello again, like river.
Okay, that's it. Do you have your bad finger ready?
I'm ready.
And also, do you have the music from the British band Bad Finger?
Yes, I'm going to use my bad finger to click on the song.
All right, I've got my Romney ready. You got your bad finger at the ready, and here we go.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
Power out.